I've been asked to say a word, so I'm going to say it now before I forget about this. It's a very important event coming up on Saturday, 31st, at the Brunei Lecture Theatre in SOAS. This is a special course on the beauty of classical and contemporary Persian music. There are flyers here on the side. James here, if you have any questions. Bismillah, it's a great honour to be asked to introduce our speaker this evening, Dr. Hossein Lahyakhin. She has the Persian expression "Sahla Mumtaneh" comes to mind. So, profundity, but without least appearance of effort, he delves into the secrets of literature and spirituality of Iran and, for that matter, the West. I'm just going to read you just three or four lines from Masnavi. Seemed to me to sum up extremely eloquently what he was saying at last time, last Wednesday, it is, about love's transformative force in what we experience from day to day, like it transforms things. At the same time, it's all about, it seems to me, what Temenos is about and what sacred art is about. In Mon Ami Guerre, Zuya Shah, as Bob Shohi of Arand. باغ بستان را کجا آنجا برند خاصه باغی که این فلک یک برگ اوست بلکه آن مغز است و این دیگر چه پوست بل نمی داری سوی آن باغ گام بوی افزون جوی و کن دف زکام تا که از آن بو جاذب جانت شود تا که از آن بو نور چشمانت شود. They bring boughs of trees to town. How can they bring a whole orchard, a whole garden there? Especially a garden for which this whole universe here is just like one leaf in comparison. And we could say that that one is the kernel, this world just the pith. Won't you just take a step towards that garden, have another sniff, and it may rid you of your cold. It may be that scent will attract to your soul that way. It may be that scent will become a light to your eyes, spiritual and physical. So it's a great honour to introduce Dr. Khomshi.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. He is one of the greatest scholars on Persian literature, particularly concentrating on Rumi, and particularly on his refrains, tarjiyat, and sonnets, and he is well versed in all fields of Persian Sufism and mysticism. So, good evening to you once again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this last session of discourses on Rumi. So far we have spoken about love, about perennial philosophy in Rumi, about fihemofih, discourses of Rumi, and tonight our topic is a little bit more technical, and I'm trying to avoid all terminology, high terminology of science of letters, to communicate what I want to say about the art of Rumi rather than the thoughts of Rumi. We are going to serve the cup of beauty, intellectual beauty tonight, just as Shelley wrote hymn to intellectual beauty. This is Rumi's hymn to intellectual beauty. You know, in literary criticism, there are different schools. Some more common and fashionable of them are five approaches to literary criticism, which I want to choose one of these five and to linger a little bit on that. First is the moralistic approach, when they want to evaluate a work of literature or even art in general. Sometimes they evaluate it according to morality, how far it is in harmony with the morality of the society, with the morality in general, how are the characters, the ideas. That is moralistic approach. The second is psychological approach, more common and more appreciated by scholars, because the moralistic approach is often attributed to people who have certain inclinations towards giving, interfering in everything with morality. And often they accuse or often they condemn certain books because of not being in harmony with morality, while it has nothing to do with art. Art is beyond morality and immorality. Morality is what the artist may use or may not use. But I'll tell you later that morality is an integrated part of all art, without any intention on the part of the artist. The artist who tries to raise the level of morality of people is no great artist. But the artist, when he is doing his job, if he does it well, he helps finally, because he creates beauty, and beauty is the guide, is the star, the fixed star that guides you to morality, to all dignity and nobility. The second, I said, is psychological approach. For example, when they analyze or discuss about Hamlet, they say, how is it that he hesitates, why he hesitates, whether something in Shakespeare has created this idea, what it has to do with Shakespeare, with whether it is consistent with the other characters of the play. See, these talks, under the influence of Freud, mostly Freud and partly Jung, critics tended to evaluate works of literature on psychological considerations. Third is socialistic approach. Socialists, you know, they believe that a piece of work, I mean, an artistic work, whether literature or painting or what, or music, it is not created in a void. It is created not by that particular artist. It is created by the time, by the economic system of the time, by the socialistic system of the time, by the government, by the relation between different classes of the society. So they, when they evaluate, they tend to analyze these things. One is the archetypal approach, which was devised by, propagated by Jung. He tried to give the basic ideas behind the stories, behind all literature, and to give the eternal pattern, behind these diversity of forms. For example, the same story has 100 and 1,000 different forms in world literature. What is the archetype? What is the general idea? What is the eternal pattern? What is its real relation with human nature? But a fifth school is the school of formalistic approach. Formalists, they believe that what is important in art, whether painting or music, in music actually form is dominating, it is all form. Some people think that music is all form. Literature, these days many scholars in Iran and outside, they believe that literature is only form, meaning just a pretext to create the form, the composition. And they believe that a word composition, like a musical composition, which is just for the sake of itself. It doesn't necessarily have to offer any meaning. And they believe that good poetry has nothing to do with what the poet is saying. Of course, I don't agree with them, and I think that the formalists have a grain of truth, of course, in what they say. All different schools have a grain of truth, but they have something to say. But people who look from a higher horizon, they can see all of them, that the psychology is right, sociology has its own share, form has its own share. And tonight we are going to speak about Rumi as far as the form of his poetry is concerned. And some scholars believe that Rumi is a man of Sufism, a man of didactic poetry, a master of mystical, theological ideas, but he is not a master of art. When he comes to word composition, he is careless, and he had not created such great pieces of art like Hafiz or Saadi, who is the paragon of perfection in eloquence and beauty. I want to say it is not true. Rumi is a great artist, and he is very careful, although he often emphasizes that these forms I put away, I relieve myself from all these forms, and this muftailun, 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 this is the rhythm. The kosht mara is killing me. I want to put them all aside, the rhyme and the rhythm and the words, everything, and I want to speak with my beloved without words, without sounds, and outside of all these involvements. But at the same time, when he is calling to his beloved, to his Lord, he says, Khoshnishin, ay qafiya andish man. I don't think about the rhyme, but you think about it. If you are drowned in the meaning, drowned in love, drowned in beauty, then whatever you say is musical, is harmonious, automatically, spontaneously. Rumi is not very careful to put this word or not that word, but the music comes with the idea. When the idea is bringing Rumi to dance, he is dancing and speaking and spontaneously composing poetry. Some people even believe that first comes the rhythm and then the ideas. He fills the rhythm with ideas. Sometimes if somebody is playing some rhythm, is beating, you may enter the circle and start dancing. Your dance fills in the rhythm, because the rhythm is ready, then you fill it with some melody, you fill it with some ideas, you fill it with some meaning. This is just like a container. empty and it is ready for someone to put the water of meaning or the wine of meaning or the wine of beauty into it. So at first I have to give an introduction to the idea of form. Form is one of the most common concepts in literature. It is so vast, actually hundreds and hundreds of books have to be written about form before you can understand something seriously about that and to come to know what is what. And it is very difficult to put people into picture when it comes to form, because so many different, sometimes contradictory meanings. Sometimes form is depreciated, sometimes is appreciated. Form may be God. According to Aristotelian philosophy, form is the unity in everything. Everything which has a form, the form of it is different from the matter of it. For example, a pitcher, a goblet, a cup. A cup is a form. The matter is not important. And the form is what gives unity and personality to a composition of material things. So, sorry, just lingered. I was speaking about the form as I forgot all about that because of the intoxication. I will remember.
One of those widespread concepts. Yes. Some people deprecate it and some people don't.
Yes. Yes. You see, when you speak of form, you speak of eternal realities. You speak finally of God, because God is the absolute form. Everything has some potentialities and some actualities. The actuality is the form. The potentiality is the matter. So the more you have actuality, you are farther from matter. Until you come to God. God is full actuality, and nothing in him to come from potentiality to actuality. Is full, perfect, and is waiting nothing. This is one view. From another point of view, form, you say, what is this form? You have to go to meaning. Rumi says, Yare ma'na shoki surat rahzan ast. Be a friend with the meaning, because these forms are robbers, are thieves. These forms take you astray, misguide you, because forms may look the same, but the meaning far, far different. And one of the greatest deceptions in the world, Rumi says, one of the greatest deceptions done by all imposters and charlatans and people who deceive and try to rob people of their wealth, they all are disguising people or misguiding people, misleading people by form. So let us read one story, the story of a parrot, and then we'll go back to other meanings of form. There was a grocer who had a parrot, a sweet-voiced, green-talking parrot, perched on the bench. It would watch over the shop in its master's absence and talk to the customers. Once as it sprang from the bench. Of course, he has a little bit abridged it, the translator, but there are some other lines that once it happened that the grocer had gone home, and when he came back, a cat sprang from the bench and flew away. It spilled some bottles of rose oil. Its master came from his house, and merchant-wise seated himself at ease on the bench, finding the bench wet with oil and his clothes greasy. He smote the parrot on the head, and it was made bald by the blow. For some few days it refrained from speech. The grocer, repenting, heaved deep sighs and tore his beard, saying, "Alas, the sun of my prosperity is gone under the cloud. Would that my hand had been broken when I struck such a blow on the head of the sweet-tongued one." He was giving presents to every dervish that he might get back to the speech of his bird, the speech of his bird. After 3 days and nights, he was seated on the bench, distraught and sorrowful, like a man in despair, showing the bird every sort of marvels in the hope that maybe it would begin to speak. When a bareheaded dervish passed by, a bareheaded dervish like me, with bald head, passed by, clad in jolap, clad in rags, in Sufi dress, his head hairless at the outside of a bowl. Thereupon the parrot began to talk. Suddenly the parrot started talking. "Oh, you, how did you become bald? Is it true that you have also spilled oil, the oil on the table?" Thereupon the parrot began to talk, screeched at the dervish and said, "Hey, fellow, how were you mixed up with the bald, oh, bald pate? Did you then spill oil from the bottle?" The bystanders laughed at the parrot's inference, because it deemed the wearer of the frock to be like itself. You see, so Rumi goes on to say that thousands and thousands and thousands of people are misguided and misled by these similarity of forms. Because people in religion say, "What is he is a religious man? What is the meaning of he is a religious man?" There are certain forms, and the forms can be assumed by anybody. Everybody can follow certain forms. So he deceives you that I am a man of God, while a man of God has no form, no particular dress. Some people have certain dress, white, a little bit larger than usual, put a long hat on their head. These are forms, and these forms impress people, and they show that what they actually are not. And Rumi says, after these poems I have not brought here, that a monkey, when he sees that somebody is praying, stands beside him and does like that, and he thinks that I am doing like him, while thousands of miles is different from what the monkey is doing and what the man of God is doing. Now, I want to read a sonnet by Rumi to show you how the same meaning may have different, the opposite of the story of parrots. In parrots, the form was the same. The meanings are different. Sometimes there are many, many forms, very similar, but with different meanings. But the opposite is that there are different forms, but they all have one meaning. So that is the idea of diversity. You have to be able to accept diversity, go deep into the meaning, and then see that this form and that form and that form, although they seem different, but they are the same. So Rumi is calling his friends, morn arising friends, early risers. Who is there that discovers the dawn, who discovers us dancing in confusion like atoms? Because when a true morning comes, you will rise to dance like the motes, like the atoms in the air. Who has the luck to come to the brink of a river, to drink water from the river, and to discover the reflection of the moon? Somebody goes to the river, he wants to take some water, but suddenly he sees the moon in the water. The moon is a symbol of the Lord, of God. And he gets the idea, oh, there is a moon. You see, so who is so lucky as to, when he is going to do something very ordinary, he suddenly happens to see what he has to search for, the moon. Who is there like a jackal, Ya'qub, from the shirt of Joseph, seeks the scent of his son? He asked to bring him the shirt of his son so that he would smell. He smelled, and then his eyes was returned, his sight was returned. You see, it often happens that you go for some ordinary, to do some very ordinary thing, and then something great happens to you. This is a great luck. Or a thirst like the Bedouin cast a bucket into the well, and in the bucket discovered the beauty like an ass load of sugar. You know, you remember the story of Joseph in the Quran, that when the brothers throw him in the well, some Bedouins in a caravan, they are passing by, so they send down the pail in order to get some water. And instead of water, they brought up Joseph. How, what a great luck that you want to get some water, and then some Joseph, the most beautiful, comes out of the well. Or like Moses. You see, there are different things, but they all gives a tiding, gives of a miracle of grace of God. God's grace may come at every moment in every form. Or like Moses seeking fire, who seeks out a bush, comes to gather the fire. According to the Quran, when Moses saw the fire, he said to his wife, that let me go to the fire and bring you some flame so that you would become warm. But he went there and he saw the light of God. God was speaking from the fire. Sometimes you go to the fire and you see the light. Or like Moses seeking fire, who seeks out a bush, comes to gather the fire and discovers 100 dawns and sunrises. Jesus leaps into the house to escape from the foe. Suddenly from the house, he discovers the passage to heaven. God, he just running away from his foes into a small house, and from there suddenly God brought him up to heaven. Or like a Solomon, he split a fish. This is about Iranians' custom when they have, during Nowruz, the traditional food for the night of Nowruz, the New Year's Day, is mahi, is fish. Why? Because in the belly of the fish there is a ring of Solomon. You have lost in the hope of regetting and refining and regaining our lost ring, we try to open the belly of a sheepish. Or like Solomon, he splits a fish, and in the belly of that fish he discovers a ring of gold, which is the ring of Solomon. The ring of Solomon is a symbol of our heart. We have lost our heart, and we have to go and fish. Fishing is going to the spiritual world. People who go fishing, finally they become fish. According to a poem in English by Shelley, if you go constantly for fishing, finally you become a fish and you go to the sea. Sword in hand, Omar, the friend of Muhammad, Omar, the second caliph, comes intending to slay the Prophet. He said, I'll go and kill this man. He came there and he was devoted and he was attracted and he lost all his heart, and he was one of the friends to the end of Muhammad. Sword in hand, Omar comes intending to slay the Prophet. He falls into God's snare and discovers a kindly regard from both fortune. Or like Adham the son. See, this is the art of Rumi. He has so many images at hand. He is never short for creating any new image for the same idea. And these are allusions. You know, allusion in poetry is one of the figures of a speech, but it is more important than a figure of a speech. I'll explain a little bit about similarity and metaphor. People think that, well, similarity or simile or metaphor or metonymy, they are something very simple. Because you say, okay, her face is like a rose. Her eyes are shining like a star. This is simile. Or sometimes you say her two stars. Instead of saying like, you directly say the rose came, meaning my rose-faced fair mistress. This is metaphor. Metaphor is when you don't say this is like that. You say this and you mean that. Or like Adham's son, he drives towards a deer to make the deer his prey, and instead discovers another prey. He was himself a prey to the deer, because he was going to prey the deer. The deer turned back and said, have you been created to follow me and to kill me? Is that the end of your creation? He thought for a moment and then he stopped. And he was the prey of some great, great idea. Or like the thirsty oyster shell, he comes with gaping mouth. When you open the mouth in order to get some water, suddenly pearl. Instead of a drop of water, you get the pearl. So Rumi constantly plays with images. And these images are of great service in literature. Some people think that this is just some ornament for literature. You are saying something and then sometimes in order to bring some charm to your poetry, you say, you assimilate or you compare two things together. It is not that. Simile and metaphor and metonymy and allusion, it means identity. Sometimes you say A is B. You don't know. You see A, but you don't see B. I put them together. This is an equation. X is equal to 4. You see, X something different. But when there is equation, you come to know that X is equal to 5, x is equal to 3, y or y is equal to, this is an equation. The equation of literature is as important as the equations in mathematics. The poets, as William Blake says, and Rumi says, and all great poets have said, first has to ascend to heaven and to contemplate things which no one has ever seen. He comes to a new consciousness, and he is eager, he is desperate actually, to communicate himself and to make people conscious, to make people aware, to give the news to people that I have been in such and such place. Like a person who has come from an exotic country, he wants to explain that I have been to such and such country, the people were like that. The poet first goes to heaven and contemplates the angels, the eternal forms, the eternal truths. And then when he comes back, he thinks, what can I say? It is these facts, these truths are unutterable, ineffable. Ineffability is one of the characteristics of mystical experiences. One is, it is ineffable, unless you just employ some image. Actually, one of the great poets of, I think it is W. Yeats, or maybe Eliot, I'm not sure, that the main job, the main task of a poet is to find an image, or a collection of images, in order to communicate. He sees something, some similarity between his own experiences and these images. So he offers these images in the hope that people would be involved in these forms and finally get something, some idea of what he has felt. So if we compare literature to music, which is actually music, because it has all the elements of music, the melody of literature is the meaning. In music, melody is the meaning, is the idea. Without the harmony, without the rhythm, the melody is a composition of some sequence of notes that later you put it into rhythm and you add some harmony. But that is the melody. The melody is the main idea, the basic idea. And if it is a good melody, I think one of the good signs is that the milkman can whistle it on the way. That is a sure sign of a good melody, that everybody can whistle it. It's very simple, but it is very attractive and charming. It is inevitable, actually. Everybody thinks, feels that you cannot change one single note. I remember how ignorant was the prince who said to Mozart, when Mozart was playing a piece of music, when it was finished, he said, how was it? He said, well, too many notes. Too many notes. Mozart said, one single note you cannot add, one single note you cannot omit, because it is inevitable. Literature and poetry and music and all good art comes to a level when it is inevitable. You don't want to make any change. Everybody wants to keep it as it is. This is, Quran is inevitable. Rumi is in many cases inevitable. You cannot find, if you search and search and search, you cannot find a better word. Even the best man of letter cannot change one single word of that piece which has rising to the level of, you could say, sublime. In literature, they call it sublime. Sublime is when you arrive to the, you have access to the eternal form, and that form, without any fault, pure and clear, comes to your mind. This is the melody. In poetry, melody is the meaning. Some great meaning, some great truth comes to the heart of Maulana, to the heart of Rumi. He finds that God is jealous, for example. God is more jealous than you. And his jealousy is very serious, because if he finds you with someone else, he will get it from you. He will deprive you. And you may ask why he does not do a good job, because we want our mistress, we want our friends. How is it that if he finds us with someone else? What someone else means, someone who is not a man of God, who is not a good person. If you are with a good person, you are with God. If you are with your mistress for the sake of beauty, for the sake of goodness, on the basis of justice, then you are with God. So God is not jealous with you. So this idea, when it comes to the mind of the poet, then he tries to give it a form. And what is the rhythm then? The rhythm is because the idea is so full of joy. The idea is so delightening, delightful, that you have to dance. So you have to give it a rhythm. And that rhythm is light and lively and gay. It is not a gloomy. Of course, we don't have any gloomy rhythm, because all rhythms are happy. Rhythm actually means happiness. Rhythm, at least it means hope. At least it means it gives you some good promise. Because rhythm means everything is okay. People don't know that. If you are in a real tragedy, you cannot play any rhythm. Rhythm in poetry, in music, there is no sad music. People say, is that a sad part of the music or the happy part? All is happy part. There is no sad part of music. Music is all happiness. It comes from the realm of hope, the realm of beauty, the realm of delight, the realm of happiness. True music, like Handel, for example, it's coming from paradise. So rhythm may be more lively, more you may contemplate. Sometimes it is more good for contemplation, sometimes good for dancing. When it is very slow, you see 1, 2, 3, 4, you have time to think about it. See, you are moving, but you are happy. You don't lose any hope. We don't have any sad mood in music. So all the music, even the poetry of Nasser Khosrow, somebody asked me, how is it that people don't like Nasser Khosrow as much as Hafiz? And I said, partly it is because of the rhythm. Rhythm is heavy, is contemplative. It is not lively and jolly as it is that of Rumi. I have changed some of the rhythms of Rumi into certain forms in painting. I'll show you that. See, since they turn round and round, this is one of the rhythms. Actually, three forms of poetry can come into this circle. You see, it is like this. Ey aashiqan, ey aashiqan, emruz ma'im shoma. You see, dum dum da dum, dum dum da dum, dum dum da dum, dum dum da dum. You see, ey saruban aahistaran, karam janam mi ravad. Dum dum da dum. You can dance with it. But if you start from here, da dum dum dum, da dum dum dum, you put two first. دادم دام دام دادم دام دام بیا تا گل برافشانیم و می در ساغر اندازیم. So they're all full of joy, full of delight, and no one more than Rumi has created forms. He has almost used all the forms, all the rhythms he has as a heritage of Persian literature he has got. But he has added some new rhythms. I will explain in my next lecture what are the rhythms created by Rumi. One actually is created by Saadi, which is perfect, most beautiful, and Rumi has used it but has not made a great job of it. Saadi is more famous in that rhythm. So in literature, music, if it is compared to music, the melody is the meaning, the rhythm is the mood, your happy, your thoughtful mood, and the harmony is the figures of speech. Many of the figures of speech are the harmony because it is in full harmony with the idea. So you are explaining about some truth, and then it has its own rhythm, and then you choose the words, you harmonize the sounds of the poetry with the idea. People who don't believe in meaning, they don't believe in mysticism, they don't believe in God, they don't believe in spirituality, they say that, well, Rumi has not done a great job, only he has expressed his own happiness in some musical sounds, and the sounds are important. Hafiz is a collection of sounds. Hafiz is a music maker, is a composer with words, a composer with sounds. And they don't think that if there is no meaning, no form would be crystallized. Form is the crystallization of some meaning. When you are happy, then you dance. Then your dance has a harmony, a rhythm. But if you are not happy, like the dance of a bear, خرس و برخس آوردن. In when an animal is dancing, it is not because it's happy. It doesn't understand the rhythm. It's just certain movements. The poetry of people who do not get the idea, get the meaning, and then create the form. They change this word with that word, and then they say he has a good ear for sounds, and he has good eye for the words, and alliteration, and assonance, and dissonance, and things like that. They try to give it some impetus, give it some charm, while there is no meaning. And they don't see that none of their poetry has become popular. People don't read them. Rumi has created so many memorable phrases. They are very beautiful, memorable phrases, and that even people who are illiterate, they can recite it. Shakespeare has given the most popular quotations to English people. There are so many that some people think that Shakespeare has not done a great job. He has just connected some popular quotations and turned them into plays. So the third part, I want to linger a little bit on the third one, which is the harmony of the music. I will read two or three pieces, if we have time enough, of course. Let me read this first. I am a painter, a picture maker. every moment I fashion an idol, then before you I melt away all the idols. You see, every moment you see the mistress and you make a painting and you say, no, it is not he, it is not she. And then you destroy it. Because you yourself understand that this is not a mirror before your mistress. I raise up 100 images and mingle them with the spirit. When I see your image, I cast them in the fire. You are the vintner Saki, or the enemy of the sober, or the one who lays waste every house I build. Whatever house I build for myself to live in, you destroy it, you make it ruin. And this last piece is again about the different forms of happiness. Do not grieve ever any joy that has gone forever. People are constantly sorrowful about the joys they have had once upon a time. Said, well, we were young and we could do this and do that, and what a good time it was. But Rumi says, never grieve over any joy that has gone forever, for it will return to you in another form. Know that for sure. Did not the child find joy in its nursing and in milk? When the child was weaned from milk, the joy came from wine and honey. This joy is an unqualified thing. The meaning is unqualified, has no color, no form, nothing at all. But it can come to every quantity, every quality, every form, every color. The joy is unqualified thing which enters various forms, moves from box to box, between water and clay. It suddenly displays its grace in the water of the rain, again enters into the rose bed and lifts its head from the earth. He just rises. If you look at the flower, you suddenly see that, well, he has come up to tell you something. Say, hello, how are you? I am the same joy you once used to have. This is a new form of that. So there is a verse in the Quran that God's atwar means diversity, and plurality of form is infinite. Every moment he has a new form. So you will never get bored with it. Every moment you will see him in a new form. He is ever fresh. Every time, every new time you think about him, something new happens to you. It is not an old God. It is true that English people say God is a good gentleman, an old gentleman, but he is not old. He is young, and every moment, just like a young boy, shows a new face, a shiny morning face. Now it comes by water and by way of bread and meat, now by way of beauty, now by way of horse and saddle. From behind these veils, suddenly one day it peeps and shatters all the idols, that which is neither that nor this. And in the end, when you experience all different forms, he suddenly comes out of all forms, and in one moment you see him without form. The formless beloved, the formless mistress. You can't imagine what it happens. It happens that you see sometimes that this was God. What was the color? I don't know. What was the form? I don't know. But I know that he was God. God is behind everything. Everything hides God by its form. But when the form goes away and all the forms go away, what remains is the face of God. And the I mean, fortunate people are those who can see beauty rather than the beautiful. Oscar Wilde says, some people see ugly things in a piece of beauty. They are corrupt because they look at some beautiful thing and they think about how much I can sell it more, handle it and make it a business for myself. They have ugly ideas about a thing of beauty. Some people see the thing of beauty and they see the thing of beauty. There is hope for them. And some people, rare people, look at the thing of beauty and then they see the beautiful, and then they find beauty in general. They understand what is beauty. Beauty without form, without any limitation, without any color, that is beauty. When you get acquainted with beauty, then you are free from this beautiful or that beautiful. You are acquainted with beauty itself, with the essence of beauty. And I don't know how much time I have. 5 minutes. Okay, so there are so many things I wanted to read for you, but I will come to an end. There is a very fine piece in Masnavi, Aashiqan ra shud mudarris husn dost. You cannot imagine that how beautiful an idea is in such beautiful rhythm. Aashiqan ra shud mudarris husn dost. Daftaru darsu sabakshan ruhi ust. Dum da dum dum dum. It's full of rhythm, full of music. And then he says that the lovers, he bring all the harmonies. He wants to say that lovers are students, but not in the University of Oxford or in Harvard University. They are in the university of their beloved. They look at the face of their beloved and he teaches them. He is the mudarris, the professor and the teacher. And then, since it is talking of teaching, then he brings all the words related to teaching. Daftaru, the book. Darsu, sabakshan ruye us. Since they are getting the lesson from their beloved, so their book is the face, their notebook is the face, their table, white table, is the face of their beloved. So everything, the pen is the face of their beloved, the look of their beloved. And then, خاموشند و نعره تکرارشان می رود تا پیش تخت یارشان. They are students, but they have kept silent and they don't say anything. But they shout, actually, the shout of their repeating, goes to the throne of their beloved. درسشان عشق و جنون و ولوله. What lessons do they take? They take the lesson of love, the lesson of madness, the lesson of revelry, the lesson of inebriation, the lesson of intoxication. These are the lessons. Not highly philosophical ziyadat as to bab silsile. Not, they don't think about ziyadat is a mathematical question. They are trying to disprove infinity and the chain of cause and effect. They say, well, this is an effect, this is the cause, and then it doesn't go to infinity. So since infinity is rejected, so there must be a primal cause. So that is God. So this is the way they want to prove God. While they are in the presence of their beloved and they are dancing and they don't need to think about the chain. They take the chain of her hair. If there is a chain, is the hair. And if there is any door is a philosophical problem that they say A is the cause of B, and then you say B is the cause of A. They say it is rejected. This is door. Door is vicious circle. It is a vicious circle.
It's like the argument.
Yeah. So, you see how much harmony he has brought into his poem while he is speaking about the lessons of the lovers. At the end, I want to just a few lines. Rumi's idea about beauty. That beauty is something more important than anything else. Beauty is the key to, like love, because even love is the son of beauty. Love goes to beauty because love is blind. It goes to beauty so that the beauty is a physician of the eye, and he gives sight to love. It is beauty that gives sight to love. Otherwise, lovers are blind. So, what does Rumi say about beauty? It is wonderful. You cannot find it in any other. Of course, there are very beautiful things. Ibn al-Arabi says beauty is sacred. It is fantastic that he says, I happen to see a Jewish girl, and her Torah, her Bible was her legs. I could recite the legs. He said, I could recite respectfully the legs to understand the Bible. You see, so it is sacred, actually, beauty in whatever form it is sacred. So Rumi says, oh, my Lord, now that you have made the whole world like paradise, please issue some commandments. Issue a commandment that no envy would ever have its poisonous effect on people. issue another commandment that no thorn would tear people to pieces like a dagger, because thorns are like dagger. Make them repent of their thornship so that they would not be torn anymore. They would not be dagger anymore. Let no, not a single leaf come down from a tree and become faded and yellow. Make another commandment, and he continues to say, issue such commandments, so that the world would be better and better and better. And then finally he says, even if you don't make any commandments, your very beauty would spontaneously, automatically do all these jobs, because beauty will change your mind to be like a dagger. Beauty would stop all things from getting faded. It gives you all the time freshness and liveliness. Beauty is beauty removes all poison of jealousy and all spurns and everything which is no good. Beauty will remove it. So it is not necessary that you make such commandments. Only we look at your beauty, and these commandments are automatically issued. Thank you very much.
Many really thanks to Dr. Komshi, and we do hope he'll be back with us really soon. I think we ought to let him go. In Arabic and Persian, the word husn means both beauty and goodness, and we've had lots of it in this lecture. Have we any questions, please? Could you speak a bit louder, please?
Yeah.
So just slowly.
When we were talking about the poem, we were talking about the profound sentence. You ended the profound sentence and said that the form, the last form, is uneditable, so we can't edit it. And then you, somehow you open the discourse to the modern static, because the modern static, basically the whole idea of 20th century is plain before. Dadaism, surrealism, cubism, impressionism, all of these are based on thought. But what you are saying, basically, you challenge the whole 19th and 20th century of the Western idea of form. And then it seems to me the way that you describe the form in terms of mathematical permutation, if you think every single artist is constructed from the gene, and the gene every 2,000 or 3,000 we will repeat it. So we have similar artists that exist now 2,000 years ago with the same idea. It seems to me in a spiritual person that is go through the kind of a spiritual development of art or form, eventually go back to the original form. So therefore, water, fire, air has no form, and we go back to that original form that you call it God. So is that a good interpretation, or you have different meanings? So the archetypes are different in your mind, in your interpretation.
Would you explain for me, because
I'm hard hearing.
No,
yeah. What I was saying
is... You're hard of hearing.
No,
it's not
just the
volume.
Yeah. In Farsi, I'm not sure. In terms of ریاضیات ما اگر همه آرتیست‌ها رو که نگاه کنیم با فرم کار می‌کنن، این فرم‌ها دوباره تکرار شدن. و یه فرم اسپیچوال برمیگرده به فرم‌های اصلی. فرمای اصلی هیچ فرم ندارن. بازی قرن بیستم بازی با فرم بود. مثل هوا هستن، مثل آب هستن، مثل آتش هستن. و بعد این مسئله میتونه یه چالش باشه برای قرن بیستم، که قرن بیستم تمام هنرمندا درگیر فرم شدن و از فرم خارج نشدن. آیا شما هم این مشکل رو میبینید داخل هنرمندا؟
بله. Yes, I think that postmodern is actually coping with this idea. It is actually going back to a more enlightened idea about form, because as you said, in the 20th century, even in the middle of 20th century, people were playing with forms, and now postmodern doesn't believe that form is limited in any, all forms go back to an ideal form which is beyond size, beyond quantity, beyond even quality. It is just, as you said, it goes into the air, it goes back to the elements of the world. So I think that in postmodern we are going to have a better sense of form, because one of the grievances of Dr. Rain, one of his complaints was that people are losing their sense of form, and we have to regain our paradise lost, because form in the true sense of the word, not in the form of just as playthings that everybody is playing with it and trying to deceive other people with some sort of forms. Forms in politics, forms in religion, forms in... These are not forms. Form is in this, in the Aristotelian idea, is the sacred thing. Form is eternal. God is the final form, and everything is compared with that final form. So the nearer the artist becomes to that final form, then he is at peace with other people, because he knows the real form, and he is not in challenge or in against any particular form. For example, when you get the idea of religion, then you are not against this. This has his own religion. This has you don't argue about the forms. But when the meaning doesn't exist, it is their story. Let me tell you this story. I wanted to say that four people, one from Persia, one from Arab, one Arab and one Roman and one Turkish. They were traveling. Somebody gave them one coin to buy something, so they wanted to share it. And Rumi, look here, that Rumi had done a very fantastic job. When he speaks of the Persian, he uses old Persian words. Go Farsi, Gufta, they were arguing what to do with it. The Persian said it's better that we buy Angur. But in Persian, you see that all the words are Persian. Farsi, Gufta, Azin, Chun, Varahim. Ham biya kin ra be anguri dahim. Just give it, it's pure Persian, like pure Anglo-Saxon word. You see, it's pure Persian. An Arab gufta ma'azallah. When he is talking of the Arab, then he uses Arabic words. Ma'azallah la. Man inab khaham na anguri daha. The Turkish an yeki kas Turk good. The Arab said, well, I don't want angur. I want enab. Well, enab means angur. Enab is the same. The Turkish said, no, 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 I want neither enab nor angur. I want uzum, a guzum, a cheshveman. An kikas Turk bot gufte guzum. Man nakhaham an enab, khaham uzum. Uzum means angur.
Uzum, yes.
And the Roman said, stafi, no, I don't want each of them.
The Greek.
See? So this is, they are arguing, idle arguing and futile arguing about forms. Forms. While angur, the reality, is the same. When the artist goes to the reality, he doesn't have any clash with the forms. He sees the reality in every form. Rumi says, I want two eyes. I am devoted to the eyes that look at people and knows the king at every dress. You know that he is a king, whether he is in rag, he is a king. So, the artist, as you said, when he approaches the true meaning of the form and the reality of the form, then these outward forms, these diversities, which is the source of so much war and clash between people, and so many people have been killed and burnt alive in fire just because of form, of these forms. While the forms were the same, the Christian, the Crusades, for example, the Christian and Muslim, why they were fighting against each other? They could be friends, they have good books, they have good scientists, they could be friends with each other. You see, it is because of those people who were fighting for the form, that this is the form of prayer, you have to stand like this, you have to do like that, you have to, in Ramadan you have to rest, at this moment you have to stop eating, at that moment you have to restart. See, these forms are get people involved and waste the time. And that is why Hafiz says, Jang-e haftadu millat hame ra uzr bine, the war of 2072, different nations and religions, excuse them all, because they are ignorant. They have not seen the angur. If you see the angur, then you say, yes, it is what I want.
Well, may I just touch on one more dimension from the religious point of view, if you like, that what's characteristic of this world, and one of the reasons why we need art that means something, is that nothing is exactly what it appears to be. What's characteristic of the spiritual world of the next world is everything is exactly what it means to be, so there isn't this contrast, this clash between form and meaning. So we say at the resurrection, a person is resurrected with their inner meanings of who they were, what they do. That's what you take with you to the next world, not what you have to look like here. Didn't matter anymore. Agar hushmandi bamni bemagni geroy kebatni membamnad nasurat bejoy. This is sad.
کرا دانش و جود و تقوا نبود به صورت درش هیچ معنا نبود. A man who is not generous, who is not noble, who has no dignity, he has no meaning in his form. And I let me this last word say that for Rumi, meaning is God. Al-Ma'ni huwa Allah. Meaning is God. And form is God. Because at the highest level, the form and meaning merge together to create one thing. He is all form. He is all meaning. And all meanings come from that single form.
It remains me to thank Dr. Khomshi one more time, and we hope and pray that you'll be back very soon. We need you.